Okay, you cheeseheads, welcome to the NAM. The sky behind is nothing but huge, and then more and more of the landscape beyond becomes visible until it stretches out beneath, and then a long pale green field and a hill behind. And then some smoke makes its way upwards, disappears into the sky, and it looks like something's moving across the green, but it's hard to tell because everything out there is the same colour. And then the date, January 1968, comes up. There's a load of them crossing the field, must be 10, maybe 15, hunched over rifles moving forward slowly. And then there's a small copter and it buzzes over the horizon. And it gets closer and you can just make out the rotors slicing it on the top, and the soldier is virtually in the foreground. He's bare-armed, wears his flak jacket open, he's weighed down with loads of gear, and the radio aerial bobbles above his shoulder. And then his rifle points out down to the ground and you can see the others misty behind the heat haze. And then you can hear the jangle and rattle of their kit and they walk exhausted. A Huey comes in low, its blades beat through the air, make a kind of soft whopping sound. And then the enormous gun pokes out to the left, and you can see the gunner's helmet leaning forward, first to the ninth, written in white across the nose of the chopper, then it lifts high, or maybe it just moves across a bit and you can see it's underneath and it's runners for a second, and then the whopping gets more and more intense, and then it's gone, and a pair of eyes stare out after it, squinting into the sun. I think they're Colby's eyes, and the front of his helmet come down low over his face, and then he sways a bit. He's still swaying, he's walking forwards, and he looks like he's all turned in on himself. And then you hear the men's voice from behind. Doesn't mean a thing, man, it doesn't mean a thing, baby. Shit, one day I might kill a motherfucking goop, that means something. And then somebody else's voice drifts over. You sound like a bitch, man. And then you can see the guys over Colby's shoulder and he sways to the left. And then the voice comes over loud and you see the guy's black face squinting out. Shit, this is so hot, it must be motherfucking hell or purgatory. And it's hot as it sounds, and you can see the heat waves across the foregrounds. And then the sound of his rifle and his kit rattling gets louder and louder and closer, and you can see his mouth and his nose now. Shit, where the motherfucking devil are we anyway? Everything ahead looks blurry and wobbly, and the grass crisscrosses the foreground. Each blade looks colossal. Somebody pulls a cow or a cart across behind, and then you see the soldiers getting closer, and some of them point their guns to the side, but most of them just let them hang down loosely, aimed in at the front, and they're walking heavily, bored. And then the guy with the radio walks out in front, looking down at the grass. Pew! A bullet knives in from nowhere and belts into his helmet, and he flies upwards, and then with a squinty smile on his face, he just falls dead on the spot. And then he's down in the grass, so's everybody else, on their bellies in a flash, and somebody's yelling, "Take cover!" He says it twice. Take cover! And then they start firing across the village, but nothing's come back, just a barrage of bullets coming their way. And then there doesn't appear to be anything there, and you can just see the little snipes of fire exploding through the distance, and the sound of the bullets exploding comes from everywhere. And it's like scanning the entire village, seeing everything at once, all blurred into one streak of yellow. And then somebody lying down in the grass pulls together a grenade and a grenade launcher or something, and then the bullets are coming down thick and fast, and there's a load of shouting horizontal rain across another, and everything's drowned out by the gunfire. And then you hear the blur of a radio, but no words. The words, "Take cover! Take cover!" echo across the foreground, and then the grenade missiles in from the left and the ground explodes. Earth and smoke spurt upwards, and everybody falls, runs across. Then I think they're retreating. The kit catches the sunlight as they belt it back into the long grass. And from behind, the Vietnamese guy's visible, hunched over his rifle, and his body kicks as he's firing mad, and he looks up at the Daystar of the chopper arcing across the sky. 4-5 airborne, they've got machine guns, those hooches, over, over! And then somebody's lying in the grass. And then he yells, come on, gun up. But all you can see is the khaki backs of the guys running for cover, and the radio comes out. We've got the gooks in the tree line, gooks in the line. And then you see three of them belt it over, fall into the grass next to them. And then one of them's Colby, kneed up against his hooch. And then he rifles out, VC are back. They're coming back, machine guns spinning out of the fire. And then Colby jerks forward, falling in on himself, and he hits the ground with a long thud and disappears into the grass. And you just see him struggling down there. And he yells, son of a bitch. And his hand clamps down on his calf. His foot lies there, and blood oozes from a huge gash in the heel of his boot. He yanks it forward from the front, and he's only just visible, tugging himself through the grass, and he tugs off his flak jacket, and the kit hits the ground. And then the sound of it firing is more and more distance, coming out just as fast, and Colby grunts, flays around uselessly, pulls his rifle back, and then butts support, he's up, scooping it across the hooch, and one eye closed, and then the VC blurs across the foreground, rifle in front, and Colby unloads 6, right off. And then you hear the shells sprinkling out of the side by the rolls on his back, and he yells out, and then there's some soppy music playing over thing, and he's out of ammo, and he strains to shove in a new magazine, and he yells, fuck, son of a bitch, fuck! And his gun seems to go off into the grass, and then somebody pops up out of the grass holding the radio, and it's really hazy and hard to see, and he yells, you asshole, over at Colby, then screams something out into the radio. Fuck, we're in trouble here, and a mortar erupts in the ground behind them, and black smoke rockets upwards, and somebody runs behind, but everything's gone into slow-mo, and then a Huey blurs across the sky, close, and then a door gunner leans out, way out, and the automatic spits fire, bam, 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 and then they disappear and bound full load of palm trees, and then almost at the side, the Huey reappears, its blades batting around so fast that you can't see them, just the Daystar up there, and then the crowd swirls in front of them, stretched and blurry. 2 Charlie, be advised, you have received 2 quads, we're taking fire, gooks in the tree line, gooks in the line. And then Colby's leaning up, holding his fire in front, squinting, yelling in the fires, and the bullet comes out, and it's all like slow motion, and the empty shells spurt out in front of his face, and the end of his rifle spits out jagged effect for fire, and breath and light, and the lieutenant is down there in the grass, and you can just see over his helmet, and it's the same colour, and he yells into the receiver, I'm in trouble down here, I'm in trouble. And then you can see them, just the Huey hovering over the top, dangling, swinging from side to side, its blade beat out the tree line, and the radio fuzzes back. Echo 2, Echo 2, Echo 2, get out of that field, get out of that field. And the door down swizz outside, and smoke streams from the chopper's tail, and it swings around crazily down to the ground, and you can see the VC pointing at it, pointing up the fire, spitting it out. And then Lieutenant Stone's more visible now, and he's higher above the grass line, and he's yelling something inaudible into the receiver, and then a bullet rips into his helmet, and the receiver flies out of his hand, he falls down into the glass, and you can see the smoke. But nothing else. And then Cowboy's down there firing, "You motherfucking fucker!" And then the empty shells eject out of the top of his rifle. Bah, 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 bah. And he's squinting up over it, all misted up with sunlight and smoke. And then the Huey pulls up behind the hutch, just dangling there. Down there, "Marines!" is written, and then long dead ends, beating down slowly. "We're coming down, we're coming down, we're coming down. I can't hold it, I can't hold it." And the words stream together until he can't make them out anymore. And the Huey's down behind the trees, and there's a colossal explosion, and an orange cloud flares upwards, and Colby's still firing out in the grass. And then he whacks his rifle, "Yeah, God damn it!" But there's no fire left in it, and you can just see him from the top, and he lifts his rifle up to trees, fire, nothing, nothing comes out. And then he yells, "God damn it!" Swing around left, and he tosses his gun down into the ground, kneeling up behind the grass, gawping out in the direction of the hooch, and two bullets pelt out of his left arm. Blood starts to erupt from the wounds, and he falls backwards. His head seems to be pulling him down, and then you see his head stretch back, and he falls into the grass, and you can see as the bleary dried up straw, a load of blood yokes upwards, and the red stuff puking from his lips, straining from the side of his face, and there's a horrible squelching sound as he inhales through it, and it bubbles out from between his lips again. Then he croaks. And then his fists clench and he grabs the grass at his side and he breathes shallow fast, then chokes in the air. And then you can see this grass masking everything off and it gets paler and bleaches out for white.
In Our Mother Saints it says, why worship God when your mother is a saint? And I kind of think that, you know, people are more worth worshipping than gods, which you don't really know whether they do exist or not. And kind of the manics are like everything to me, so that's why I did that. What I did was kind of got a picture of Jesus in exactly the same position as Nicky Wire and chopped them all up and mixed them together so Jesus became Nicky Wire. Oh yes, I had a big quote along the bottom from Jack Kerouac. The whole thing took ages and ages from like the first initial just finding the pictures, because it took a long time to find Jesus in the same position as Nicky Wire. And then I had to like photocopy the pictures to be the same size, then cut every single picture up into lots and lots of little pieces and stick them all back together again, and then cut out the letters for the stencil, which took hours and hours. I never ever ever complete anything, and the fact that the one thing I managed to complete was, you know, about the manic, so that's a big thing. Oh yeah, I did a little painting as well, which took about 10 minutes. Yeah, that was in the Time Out review.
Yeah, I did a painting of a woman sort of leaning, really, and she was really white and quite flat. And it's kind of inspired by the Little Baby Nothing kind of thing, and she was suffering, that kind of idea, and my Marilyn obsessions and kind of, and like Blanche DuBois and stuff, just kind of like delicate and fragile and elegant and... It's just that, really. In the Time Out article, it said that she was...
Sickly.
Yeah, it said it was a sickly woman in oils, and that really annoyed me because she wasn't sickly.
It wasn't in oil.
Oh, yeah, and it wasn't oil, it was acrylic. And it was really watery as well, half of it. And it's just like, you know, retard, you know. But anyway, it was not at all sickly, and that quite upset me. That was meant to, no, they said it was sickly, because that's completely not the idea. It's just because she was white, I suppose.
I did three pictures, Richie, and then one that was made up with loads of different things in it, and then, what was the other one? It was the Generation Terrorist Bros with the European stars in the background, like a big flag. Yeah, I did a Slash and Burn picture, and a You Love Us stencil.
Mostly the CD covers, which I did five of. Two for Sheer Suffrage, and that didn't really have much of anything to it, really. One in black and white, one in colour. Mattress Desk one, it's basically just the graphic image of the screen to a sign, it's not really going into what the song is about. And the Small Black Flowers one with the black and white photograph on the front. All I want to do is live, no matter how miserable it is. Because our art teacher is like music mad, so, and he's just trying to get you into art in a kind of fun way that's other than drawing like flowers in a vase or something that doesn't really have much excitement for you.
They've got a lot of confidence. They had a lot of confidence when they first came out, even though nobody liked them. You know what I mean? Because there was a lot of monkey bands like Kingmaker and stuff like that. You know, everyone liked them, but then when the Manics came along, a certain group of people could like them, even though a certain, well, quite a large majority hated them. And that's, I think that's what pushed them and made them stronger. The amount of hate from a lot of people made them. It made them.
Little Baby Nothing. And I love the whole lyrics of that. And Die in the Summertime, that someone somewhere soon will take care of you. I repent, I'm sorry, everything is falling apart. One, I really like that. And I don't know why, really. But I just think that's really kind of... Most of their songs were very wordy. I mean, almost too much so. So I suppose in that way it's more poetical as opposed to lyrical.
Things like Catcher in the Rye and stuff. Like, I only read that because Richie said it was one of his favourite books, but then it was a really good book, and I really like that book. But I wouldn't have read it if it wasn't for that, I doubt. And things like Camus and Plath and typical things that they mention in their lyrics.
Yeah, and American Psycho, I wouldn't have, you know, found that if I hadn't heard about that. And even though it's not the most pleasant of books, I'm glad I read it. Yeah, and Frisk as well. That wasn't exactly pleasant, but, you know, you're kind of glad you read them because you need to kind of read these things so you've got things to judge by. And rather than just reading the classics, which are on everyone's bookshelves, which are totally boring, you get to find something a bit more interesting.
When they first came out, a lot of people hated them, most of the majority of people hated them, and a few people liked them. And that few people were basically people that in school they felt like misfits and, you know, out of place. Everyone else was following the trends and everything else, like main bands and stuff like that. Same here, okay, not a lot. I don't get on very well with people because they're very argumentative and stuff like that. And to like them, the Manics make you sort of, they broaden your mind and stuff like that. They make you see a lot of things that you never saw before, like Abby said. And they make you sort of read a lot of books you never read before. They had something to say, unlike other bands did in that era of 92, 93.
And their lyrics are good because they always found something else to talk about, like especially on Home 5, like anorexia and things like that. That's made it more interesting than other bands, like just go on about boy meets girl, etc, etc. You kind of, once you've heard that several times, you don't really, that doesn't really hold any interest for you anymore.
Well, no, when I'm at university or anything, they're not really into music at all, apart from one girl who's into 911 and stuff. But the friends I have out of university, they are all into the Manics and good music and stuff. So, yeah.
I've got like Erica, my friend, who's on, but she likes them, but she's seen them live twice with me, but she's like likes them live rather than, she doesn't normally listen to the albums at all. She isn't like fan-like me. Actually, I saw the advert, it's like perfect because I've already done all the work by then, and it's just like, what really, I'd sent it off to the Manics before, but then you never like know if they see it at all ever.
Yeah.
So like it's just probably in the trash can in the PR's office or
Patrick,
something.
Patrick knew about the
Yeah, Patrick Jones knew about the exhibition.
Nikki's
brother.
So if he knows about it, presumably Nikki would know something.
I haven't got Vox from last year, and that's really annoying. They're on the cover.
Yeah, I got that.
And I can afford it, and then it's sold out.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to get hold of it, but I was getting it from Martin, but until the ticket fiasco, he doesn't write to me anymore. He hates me.
Oh, that's where I got the videos off.
Which videos have you got?
All of them, I think.
Oh, I've got three of them. I've got Reclamation.
I've got Reclamation, and most of it's just stuff that's been on the telly the last year, but the first bit is
one
a gig from
story,
Japan or something. On Japanese TV.
With him Nicky trashing his face.
Yeah.
He hits the camera, he's got threatened with legal action for that. And you see the camera like pan across the ceiling. I like the lyrics from Condemned to Rock and Roll, No Innocent Exit When Hope Dies, and Claustrophobia Buys My Mind, etc. Read them all if you want, but I don't know why I like those, I just like the words and the way they're put together.
Everyone else goes around and they're just like, ugh, and that's about the most you can get out of them. Yeah, other bands, they just go around and, you know, you read an interview and there's nothing there. Whereas if you read their interview, you just think, I didn't know anything about this subject, I didn't know about that subject, I would have never thought of that. And
that's like in their early interviews, every other band's like going on about their new effects pedal, their new, new riff, yeah, or drugs. And Manic's like answered their questions with quotations or something, or they went on about these controversial comments about other bands that were around. Nothing since has matched up to them, or nothing before.
Like Korn? Like, I've lost me now. Right, Nirvana, well, when they were around, you know. And Radiohead. And they're very intelligent interviews they've got.
Because I remember hearing them say something that they had to make themselves believe that they were the best band, because they didn't necessarily actually believe it. They just had to make themselves believe it, otherwise they'd never get out of Blackwood and stuff. Is that
exactly,
right?
Because if you go around just set, you know, if they had just gone around thinking, well, we might make it, then, you know, they're never going to get anywhere. But, you know, they went up to everyone and said, yes, we are the best band. Someone's going to take notice, aren't they?
Like, we're going
to have them listen.
See bands all the time in Brighton, and they're just like...
They're never going
to
get anywhere.
You know they're never going to get anywhere, and they probably know they're never going to get anywhere because they just troll around looking and wearing brown and going and playing their little instruments. Just like, I mean, I like it often, but you know, and they just don't have any kind of.
When they dress like they could be someone on the street, so that if you saw them walking down the street, you wouldn't know any different, apart from the swagger, of course.
Yeah, just I like their hypocrisy, the way they can change their mind, and it doesn't matter. You know,
I'd worry about that forever. It drives me mad. Yeah. When I was younger, I was like, I used to mouth off at everything. And every time anybody ever said anything to me, like people being nasty, I just go. But now, and when I was your age, I was completely like that. But now people say things to me, and I just go. But I used to just all the time. I used to say what's ever on my mind, even if it's just completely stupid stuff. But now I really don't, and it's quite annoying. And I've become quite. Placid, and I don't have many opinions about things, but I used to be like Nikki used to, I don't know.
It just made you hit back more, didn't it? Basically, they what they say to you makes you more annoyed, or makes you sort of enjoy.
Yeah, and you just love just doing anything which is, you know, is going to really irritate them. Yeah. But now, since I've gone to college, everybody's been really nice to me, and no one cares about anything, and they've just been really nice to me. So now, when people are nasty, it's like, oh.
Yeah, but image has to be important because, I mean, especially if you're on stage, if you're going to get up on stage, you've got to look different to everyone who's in the audience. Yeah. Or, unless they're, you're really famous and they're copying you. But you can't go up there and just be the same as anyone else. Otherwise you might just turn around and just listen to them and don't need to bother watching them. You want to have something to look at on stage.
And image sells better as well.
Yeah.
Like in magazines and things, get more photos.
Exactly. That's why you can never, cast because you just look at them and you've got their big, horrible, ginger, curly hair. And it's just like,
nothing wrong with ginger people.
Yeah, but you haven't got hair like him.
No, fair enough.
You've got green hair.
Yeah, that was a bit of an experiment that went wrong.
Ocean Colour Scene said that them, Oasis and Paul Weller were the best bands in the world and there was no one else in competition.
That's because Paul Weller's their god. Paul Weller's their dad.
That happened so many years ago, and it's not now.
So you've got every right to slag off Ocean Colour Scene now, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're crap.
It's brown music.
You could tell an Ocean Colour Scene fan from a Manics fan. Okay, this is a bit stereotypical, but Manics fan, eyeliner, look, fair enough. Ocean Colour Scene fan, stupid hat, and some Adidas or something, you know?
Yeah, but they're so not mods. Where we go on Saturdays, there's all these boys. And they're like, they all think they're mods,
and they have the Ocean Colour Scene dance.
Player out of Ocean Colour Scene plays his guitar and he goes like this, and he's sort of, and they all do that when they play a song in a circle, and I hate it. And they think, and someone came up to me and goes, some of my shoes, Roger Daltrey. He goes, oh, Roger Daltrey used to wear shoes like that. I'm like, yeah, okay.
The Spice Girls are cool.
The other day looking through the Spice Girls book, just to get that picture of James, and I managed to rip it out.
Oh, Amy bought a packet of them. I've got it on my door. Yeah, a photograph of him with all the Spice Girls and their keyboard player on the side.
Yeah, sort of cut
them all out.
I could swear that keyboard player is Richie. Has anybody noticed that? He looks just like him.
Oh, he doesn't.
Now I know where Richie's gone.
He's grim and he's sad.
He looks like Richie. First time I saw him,
Richie is actually in my town.
He doesn't have
daughters. Why did he go to India? He was trying to escape someone.
He wouldn't wear a caftan.
We've got more style than that.
I don't know, this telly used to look good in caftans.
Well, when we went to see them in Brighton on the 8th of April, we were just walking around the town and we went into this shop called Snooper's Paradise, which was made of lots of stalls. And Edward just tapped me on the shoulder and said, "It's James." And I just, "What?" And he says, "It's James." And I went,
so I couldn't say it very loud because he was like there and I couldn't go, "Oh, look, there's James."
And then we stood
and she went, turned around, she goes, "What?" And I'm like, "There's James."
Yeah, and then
we're
looking at these books, looking over our shoulder, you know, just casually looking at him. And then he left the shop and we're like, "Oh no, we've missed the opportunity." We went out and then we saw him out there.
And he went into a rocket and he came out. And when he came out, I went
He left his girlfriend, in rocket. So we went over and spoke to him. And Edward just said to him, you know, "Hello." And he just said, "This is my sister and she's obsessed with you." And I was like, "Oh, great, thank you."
I didn't know what to say.
He says, "Oh, we've seen you 6 times now." He says, "Oh, bad luck." And, you know.
So and I went, "Oh, but I don't mind." And and he went, "Oh."
And it's just really embarrassing.
So I made it seem like I really didn't want to see them or anything. And I was just like, "Oh, it's you." And, you know.
And I said, "May I take a photo?" He says, "I haven't got a camera." And I was like, you know, why would I want him to take the photo? I'd never get it. And so I just whipped out my camera. And then I was
I have. And, went on.
And I was too scared to have my photo taken with him. So I had
It didn't even occur to you.
No, it did. Because I said no, because I was too shy.
Oh, yeah, because I said, "Why shouldn't I take it of you with him?" And she went, "No, no." And so I just goes, so I was like...
And he looks like a tourist in the photo. He's got his little backpack on.
He looks like
and he's so short.
He's as wide as he is tall.
And he's just got his hand over his eyes like that. Because it was sunny. And there's Edward standing there going, like this in his shades.
It looks like I was really, a cheesy grin, but I was just sort of standing there. Because I wasn't that excited when I met him. I was quite, afterwards, you know. But I was just like, it's kind of, you know. It didn't click with me, really. And I looked like I was just about to have, like, some kind of fit or something. And that's what I hate it.
But he did look like a tourist who'd walked into the shot. Yeah, they played really, really, really well. But it was like really disappointing because when they played the instrumental bit of Design for Life at the beginning, the first time we saw that, all the fans were just like singing along and it was really, really nice. And you know, it just kind of brought tears to your eyes and it's all, you know, because everyone was all singing together and it was really nice. And this time, nobody did. And then there was just all these blokes started cheering when all the police were beating everyone up and there was all this violence and the blokes were going, "Yeah!" And he's like, "They've missed the point. What is this?" And you're just looking around in total bewilderment, like, what is this? I don't understand. Yeah, and then Nicky Wire threw his feather bar and I got some feathers and I've got them at home in a jar. I don't care how squashed I get, I'll stay there.
I've seen Southampton and Manchester and the 9X one was bad for having so many new fans. Not against new fans, but when they kind of cast Lagerlands as kind of punch you all the time, but not very nice. And they just sing the lyrics wrong and they don't sing in the right places and they don't know the right songs. And they look like cast fans.
I'm a new fan.
You're not a new fan, you're just a fan.
You're not a cast fan, new fan.
There's the new fans, the old fans that are too obsessed, and then there's just fans, and you're just a fan, so that's alright.
Yeah, there's the new fans that don't know anything, but everything must go in Design for Life, Ken Carter, whatever. But then there's the new fans like moi, that know about Design for Life and everything must go, but they also know about the stuff after that, and I've bothered to find out, you know what I mean, unlike some of them who don't bother. But...
James has been kidnapped. He was last seen. With a fan.
A fan.
The girl is also missing. Nikki.
I like Nikki.
Nowadays James, but Richie, you know.
Now James.
Now James.
Now Nikki.
Yeah, Nikki.
I like James.
James is a bit podgy.
I like
but
that
But he's
boy.
Very sweet.
I do. Have you seen the pictures of Nikki and Select in that? Select
yes.
With Oasis on the cover.
What, with his tiara?
Yeah.
That's when I saw but you could only see him as like a little blip in the distance when I saw it. And there's people just sat down in their seats, and there's me, Erica and Mark were just like jumping up and down going mad, and everyone else was just sat down through all the songs and not participating at all, like reading like the flyer that was left with all the merchandise and stuff. What are you doing? We paid £16 to get here. Because you associate...
And they keep playing the video on the chart show, and I was
there she goes.
Yeah, every like
because it was on fever pitch, which also tarnishes it.
Yeah.
It's nice
video as well. It's not. It's grimy, and it's got them sitting there being scabby and singing them playing their instruments like here. And
I don't mind that.
Oh, it's wild.
The Beatles did
See, they did that before it was
fashionable.
No, the Beatles did that before it was fashionable.
They did it before anyone else did it.
Yeah. They did it before Oasis did it.
So it's their fault.
It's not their fault.
It
Beatles
is.
Are good.
No, they're not.
Beatles are good.
No,
they are.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Everyone's not great.
Working on Sean Moore's birthday card. That's about it at the moment. I'm doing a painting for Nationalism as a creative product from New Art Riot. What did you think of Vanishing with Richie Malick?
Oh, well, that was how that program.
We saw
Simon Price. I saw Simon Price at the Brighton gig, and I shouted at him, but he didn't hear that. But I still did it.
I wanted to keep it on video though, because
And why did I have Boy George on it? Because when Nikki said the thing about Michael Stipe, he was going, Boy George is going, oh, homophobes, and it's like, yeah, don't think so.
I hated the way on that program they held either people who, you know, didn't know him at all and then pretended they did, or people who always said they didn't like him, just talking about how sad it was, and
yeah.
That really
and
angered
when they
me.
They started going on about Ian Curtis. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, right, so.
Yeah. And when they had that man dressed up in that prison outfit, sort of holding on to bars, what's he doing?
And those fans.
Oh, God,
you know,
those evil-looking fans.
Oh, I thought they were cool.
The
like
one
them.
With the big eyes, who's on that
yeah.
And
when,
team.
I saw her suit. I see her all over.
Yeah,
every time I go to a manic
yeah,
shop, she's always there.
Yeah, she's on that,
no matter where.
That programme on one of Martin's videos about the Welsh poetry.
And the Gold Against the Salt
T-shirt.
With Mark and Martin.
Yeah,
she's
weird,
she's got
yeah.
eyes like this.
Yeah.
And she talks like this. Like,
I'm not too intense.
She's really
intense. Ever.
Because
even though Richie isn't there now, he's still kind of responsible for where they've got.
Mm.
And he still is part of the band, even though he's not actually physically there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he will always be there.
Yeah.
So. Makes your hope come back.
Yeah,
it? Like,
but I kind of like the way it is remembered rather than if it hadn't been mentioned, I think, no, you can't just forget about him that quickly, you know. You can't just forget about him. Yeah, people aren't forgetting about Kurt, but like, for the first year after he died, every single week, you know, without fail, the Enemy and Melody Maker would have something about. Occasionally they do, but not very much at all.
It's just more about sort of Dave Grohl and what Courtney's up to nowadays.
Oh,
wow. Chris with his sweet 75 band.
Dave Grohl.
The Foo Fighters. Yeah, and he's got a goatee now.
Still, I love them. Because you remember what they used to look like. You forget James has a bit of a paunch now.
Just a little.
Sean's
look the same since
sort of
three.
Yeah.
There's
very bad pictures of Sean in Enemy recently.
Yeah,
they're still really intelligent.
Joins
into
the neck.
Yeah, they still are intelligent. Yeah.
I'm
not
going to
go just
because
they're
fat, is it? No. Yeah, the
most beautiful and most intelligent band.
I'm in the Museum of the 20th Century in Vienna speaking to Valley Export. I understand that this is a retrospective of your work titled Split Reality. Could you start by talking about the title, Split Reality, and whether there are any general underlying concerns throughout the period that this exhibition covers?
By the title Split Reality, or by the Split Reality, I mean that I always was very concerned with to explain or visualize, yeah, or use images. Who can explain or which can explain about splitted reality, about different realities, yeah, or something about different layers of reality? And this is also related to perception. Splitted perception, yeah, how can we see one thing comparing or in a context of another thing? So, I mean, for me, yeah, it's very, very important, yeah, to speak about or to visualize, yeah, splitted images, splitted perception, splitted, as I said, realities, yeah, because I think there is never one reality, there's never one perception, there's never one image, yeah, every image has so many, many other images included, yeah? And it came out, and the roots are always very different, so one cannot really say there is one thing, yeah? I would not go now in philosophy, yeah? But I think this is very important for my work. I always had this, yeah? Different medias, this means different to use different medias, yeah, in a complex installation and bring the meaning of these different medias together. But in that way, it became a new meaning. Yeah, it became a new meaning, because if painting is related to video, or video is related to computer, or computer is related to painting, this is just a very simple experience, yeah? Every media became a different, is in a different context, yeah? And became a different media, and became his own different media reality.
I can see one installation with the title Split Reality here, which obviously gave the name to the exhibition.
That's true, yeah. This installation, it's a video installation, but also uses a record and a record player, gave the title also for this exhibition. When you come in the exhibition room, also in the museum, you see a monitor, a video monitor, a record player with a record, and then you see a recorder, a player, video player. But what it means by that, when you put on the record, and the record is Strangers in the Night, it is by Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra is singing this record. When you put on the record player, you see me, and I hear the record, yeah, and I sing after Frank Sinatra, Strangers in the Night. So this means you have different levels, yeah, the level of the media. My singing, Frank Sinatra's singing is not heard, yeah? One cannot hear it, yeah? But everybody can hear me when I sing his song, yeah? And you can put on the video through the record player. So there are different levels on it, and it's really very fun, because the concept I had in 67 or something like this, but it was never, I never had a video equipment in that time, but I had an invitation in 69 to London. I guess it was called Artslab or whatever. It was a really a very alternative for avant-garde space or underground space, and for that I could make it first as an, I did it first as a performance, yeah? So the first time I ever did this thing was in London, because in that time, in the late 60s and also in the beginning of the 70s, I had quite often invitation to go to London. So this also, Strangers in the Night, leads to the main theme of this exhibition. It's not really a retrospective, because it shows also new work, yeah, not very far away when I made this work, yeah. It shows also new work, but I picked up, or I made the decision that I only will show, or mostly will show, media work, yeah? Media with video, with laser, with computer work, and so on. So this is a part of my work. I didn't show, for example, documentation about my performance work. I did not show my performance work when I used the body as a configuration in the city or in the nature. For my performance work, I only have erosion in this exhibition, and this is also funny because it's really very funny. I was in London when I did it first, yeah, and there's also a picture, a photograph in, yeah, when I did it in London, so this is a connection to London now. But so I only show a lot of my media work and video installation.
You consistently use video as a medium or strategy in your work. Could you say why video is so important to you?
It started in the mid-60s, when we found out that video is available, that this video is a new medium, and when one can use it for artistic expression. I found out that it's also a new aesthetic to make an image. My main concern is also the question, what is an image? Yeah, this means it's very different, or it's very, yeah, it's different if you have a painted image or an electronic image and so on and so on. But with video, you can also think about the aesthetic, the artistic aesthetic, yeah, of an image or of an installation, and also of a kind of body performance work. So this was one point. For me, this was very important in the 60s. And the other thing was very important for me was, and others too for sure, that it's an instant medium. This means you can instantly, yeah, you have the image. Yeah? You are here and you make this gesture, and the gesture is on the screen. Or you delay it a little bit, what we all did very often in the beginning of the 70s. Yeah? You delay it and you make the gesture, and the gesture is coming after maybe 10 seconds or 15 seconds. Yeah?
I understand you want to refer to your installation Time Gaps, Space, Fissions, first installed in 1973.
Yeah, this is a kind of remake now. And when you pass by Split Reality, by this installation Split Reality, you see two monitors standing in vis-a-vis. This means there's one monitor on your left side and one monitor on your right side when you go in the exhibition. This means that the monitor is standing face by face in the opposite, yeah? So this means you have to go through these monitors, yeah? And what was the installation is that are two cameras, yeah, outside on the street, and there are installed back by back, that one camera shows the coming movement of a car, and the other camera shows the going of the moving of a car, yeah? And for this you have a kind of gap, yeah? A kind of time gap. And on the monitors, yeah, you see this car coming to the visitor and then going away from the visitor. And when you stand in between these two monitors, yeah, the car is going through your body. Because it comes, then it's invisible, and then it goes. And it's going through your body. This means this is the space vision. So you have the time gap outside on the street, and the space vision you have inside in the gallery room or in the museum room. Yeah. So this I did in 37, it was done in Steirischen Herbst, and we rebuild it now, and also with the old monitors. So the picture the image is not quite very well done, but I used really the old installation for that. But it has something to do also with when I got the invitation to do here an exhibition in this museum. I really wanted to tear apart the whole museum, yeah? So really to make two parts out of the museum, yeah? Tear it apart, yeah? And that you can go out from the museum, or something can come in the museum. In the institution of museum, I mean fresh air, yeah? So it's a kind of rebelling against the really petrified institution of museums, of the museum, yeah? Of the meaning of museum. This I couldn't do, but I made a passage. This passage leads from the inside of the museum to the outside of the museum, yeah? And it's about 28 meters long, so it's quite very long. And the passage depends on two walls. One wall is a glass wall, so it's transparent. You can see through. And the other wall is on lead, so it's not transparent. And these walls are standing face by face, also, so that you have a passage. And on the lead wall, yeah, you have three small gaps. And there's a sound in, and you have to go really very near to the sound gap. And then you hear some poems written by me, and so, but you have really go very near. This means you have to put your ear, yeah, on the lead wall. So, and this is, so you have a very good contact and with the lead wall. So this means you have physical, yeah, also a contact with this passage. The passage starts in the museum space wide. This means it's about 2 meters wide, yeah, and it goes then down like a triangle, and at the end of this passage it's only 1 meter. So you have, when you go through, you have also a feeling, it's very wide at the beginning, yeah, but the more you come to the end, yeah, to the other opening of the passage, yeah, you feel it's always narrow and narrow and narrow. So you get a physical feeling, yeah, when you go through this passage. And so this means when you come into the museum, you have this time gaps and space fissures as a kind of divided situation in a museum. And when you go through the museum, you can go out, yeah, and you have also this divided situation in 2 parts by this passage. So it's a kind of line, imaginary line through the museum. It's part. So this means it's also a kind of splitting the exhibition area.
We are now in front of an installation with the title Autohypnosis, which was first installed in 1973. I see many people walking on a white square area with a diagram.
This is a kind of, one can say also, a kind, it's not really interactive video. It was done in 73. It's not really interactive, but it's a kind of active video. It's very simple done because it's an earlier work, and I had, in that time I didn't have computer. So it's only done by something touching with the feet, and then it sends the signal to the monitor. It's also kind of this earlier video work I did explain something also about the medium themselves, how to use the medium themselves, because as I said, video has a very interesting own technological or aesthetic language. It's really a new language. In that time it was really a new language, and only in the late 70s video was used also for films. And so as filmic work, for filmic work, yeah. But before this, until the mid 70s, yeah, mostly video was used for installation or interactive or active installation, yeah. So to use the medium themselves is with his inherent, yeah, attitudes.
You also use computers and laser technology in your work. We are now in front of an installation called The Scream from 1995, which shows your glottis, that is a part of a larynx, on a video screen, then an oscilloscope on 10 monitors, and a laser beam.
Yeah, this is for me, it's a new work, but it related also in some of my contents, what I did with language, for example, or with text. 3 parts, yeah, are coming together in different cases or for different reasons, yeah, to build up this one installation. And also different medias like this. When you write on lubrication earlier via laser, then you see a kind of mirroring. So it mirrors also, yeah. So this means it's also a kind of splitting or split, yeah, text, yeah. So the splitting or the split, the split are coming also in this installation, yeah.
We are now in front of a video sculpture with the title Touching. As I understand, your first video installation made in 1969.
You see 4 monitors, yeah, lying on the floor. So this means the video image is like lying on the floor, but the monitor is lying on the floor. And what you see is feet touching the video screen, the monitor screen, yeah. So this means that the monitor screen is kind of invisible or imaginary, yeah, because the feet are always touching in the movement, yeah, this um the screen. And this depends also to some of my video work I did or some of my work I did when I thought about what does it mean a screen, what does it mean a screen. For example, in my tap and touch cinema, yeah, I used my own naked body as a screen. Or I projected also in other filmic work, I projected something on a screen. Or one can, for example, project a house on a house. What does it mean? Which house is now real? Real, the real house, or the house? It's a media house, a technological house. Yeah. So I thought about a lot about what does it mean if you have a screen and what kind of different screens one can also have. Yeah. Computer screen, a video screen, a filmic screen, a nature screen, a human or a body screen or like a skin and so on. For example, what I did once was I did a TV action and it showed at the TV action was done during the announcement of some news, yeah. It was on the end of this. Actually, it should be during the news, but they didn't make it. This video action, this TV action was in 71, and suddenly the image changed, and you saw a family sitting and staring out of the monitor to you, and you are sitting in your own home and staring in the monitor. So it was a kind of mirror, but it was not a real mirror. And the screen, the monitor screen, or the TV screen was imaginary, yeah. It was gone, yeah, because you're sitting in front of someone who is behaving like you, staring on a TV screen. And so this one has also something to do what I thought about what could be a screen or what is the use of a screen. And this touching is also a work here, yeah, which deals with this thinking, yeah.
Bali, your exhibits cover a wide range of media. We talked about installations and sculpture, but I see photos, for example, digitized photos displayed on the walls. Would you like to talk about this work?
Yeah, these digitized photos, I used the computer, yeah, in extending my photo work, what I did in the 70s and also in the 80s, yeah, to use my own body or to use the body, but together with nature or other objects, yeah, or with in an urban situation. I call this work configuration with architecture or configuration in the nature. And these digital photos, yeah, I use the body, and it's my own body or another photographed body, but I use the computer, yeah, to bring objects to this body or to change this body, yeah. And so I made a kind of, I really go in the body. But one cannot do this in reality because I never can cut the body and take it away and so, some parts of this and so. So I used for that, I used the computer, yeah, and also to make different layers. That means, by this I mean to bring different images together, yeah, from one person in a different, bring different images together by one person in that year and older and younger and so on, also different body parts. So I use the computer what for that work, what you cannot do in reality, yeah. So this is also a kind of research in my body work.
Do you have a new project and would you like to talk about that?
I'm working on a film script, yeah, and the film script is quite finished, but now I have to find the money. But in video work, I do a new project. I use different images of the glottis, and each glottis says one letter. Each glottis says one phoneme only. And then I bring these different images with one phoneme together. There must be 26, because I guess the alphabet has 26 phonemes. And then I bring these 26 phonemes together and make out of this a poem. so that you only see the glottis, yeah, and you only see this image, and every image says only one phoneme, and then you bring this together. And it's quite difficult work, but for this also I need a computer program. Yeah, this is my next step, to computer together with video work.
Vale Export, thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you very much.